I'm Kevin Power, and this is Sascapes, the podcast featuring stories of arts, culture, and heritage in Saskatchewan. This episode of Sascapes is sponsored by the Saskatchewan German Council. The Saskatchewan German Council is a provincial nonprofit umbrella organization to nearly 40 member groups representing all people of German-speaking backgrounds. By engaging people of all ages to become active and involved partners in a vibrant multicultural community, the SGC is committed to the preservation and promotion of the German language, traditions, and culture for all people of Saskatchewan. You'll find the link to their website in the show notes. This is the fifth in a series of special Sascapes podcast presents entitled German Culture Alive, all sponsored by the SGC. You can hear all the other episodes in this series so far by going to the SGC's website or by downloading Sascapes for free from any of your favorite podcast apps. And a special thanks to Paved Arts in Saskatoon for providing me with some special equipment I needed to make the recording of this episode. Welcome to episode 102 of Sascapes. Valtrauta Stevin's artistic sensibilities run so deep, it's as if they form the very makeup of her DNA. Her earliest inspiration was her father, who was a visionary and a well-respected puppeteer in Germany. Valtrauta wanted nothing more than to follow in his footsteps, and she did just that. This is the story of her family surviving the turmoil of World War II, where often they had to hastily relocate and leaving many stunning treasures behind. Her life's journey eventually brought her and her husband and four children to Saskatchewan. Only a few of her father's puppets made the journey. She was groundbreaking in bringing the art form of puppetry to life in Saskatchewan. Her second passion was a skill she also learned from her father, the art of scissor cutting. This is a 40-year reunion between Valtrauta and myself. Yeah, 40 years. And if you listen to episode 100, you'll remember I talked about my own passion for puppetry. So the energy in this room during the recording was palpable. It was like a meeting of two minds and hearts, and for me, a reunion to remember. Valtrauta reflects on her life philosophy, which has always held her steadfast. The times you live through are the times you live through. What are you going to do? And you know, truer words were never spoken than right now, while we find ourselves still very much in the grip of now the fourth wave of a global pandemic. This is Valtrauta Stevin. This is actually the first in-person podcast I've done since the pandemic. Everything has been done by telephone. Valtrauta Stevin. No.
Yeah.
Wow.
See, I'm going to...
Well, I just have to say I am Valtrauta Stevin.
But most importantly, what I want to start this off is this is truly a 40-year reunion. We have not seen each other in 40 years.
What is amazing.
It is amazing. And I was so shocked when your name was brought forward to me to do a podcast with. And I just squealed with delight because I remembered you right away. And I've always remembered our working together 40 yeah. years ago. So I was just over the moon.
And but when you came back to Saskatoon yeah. and your name showed up, yeah. I was always wondering, is that the Kevin Power
yeah.
I knew?
Yeah, yeah.
But I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure how rare the name is.
Ah, there's only one of us. They broke the mold after they made me.
That's good. That's
yes.
good.
So we're going to start early on in your life because I want to get a journey of where you from where you started to where you are now. You grew up where in Germany?
I grew up in Halle, an der Saale, which mm-hmm. is a fairly big city. in the former center of Germany,
yes.
about 100 kilometers south of Berlin.
Yes.
And my father was a puppeteer.
Mm-hmm.
He had hand puppets then.
So he was probably your first major artistic influence.
Well, I grew up among puppets. Right. And, you know, when the newspaper reporters came and made an interview of him, they always, of course, included the little daughter of them. I'm an only child. So it was so cute, you know, a little child between all the puppets.
Yeah.
So I grew up with them. To me, that was normal. That was the thing it was. And I had puppets when I was very young. I think I'm about 4 or so. I don't remember them.
Mm-hmm.
But my mother told me that I played with a knotted handkerchief behind a chair. Because I'd seen it, I wanted to do it. And later on, I was just playing and I saw some shows my father gave. He was traveling most of the time. And then we moved to Vienna. And on Christmas, when was it? 44.
Uh-huh.
Christmas 44, I got a set of puppet heads.
Uh-huh.
My father had designed them, and we had always a wood carver who did them. And these are these ones in the two upper fields in this cupboard. And on that Christmas, my father had to work in the studio. He made puppet films then. And he taught me how to paint them.
Uh-huh.
Because they were raw. They were just the wood crafting. And he taught me how to paint them. So I spent my 2 Christmas days in 1944 in heaven. I was painting my puppets. Now then, of course, got a little funny with the war going to end. We had to escape and couldn't take anything along. But my parents sent a few crates.
Yes.
One of them arrived, and these heads were in there.
And everything else had to be left behind?
You wouldn't believe what people lost.
Yes.
More or less everything, and it was funny. Some things you have, how come I still have that, you know? So there was nothing to be done. We had other things in our heads, trying to find a place to live. We went back to Halle, trying to find a place to live, trying to find something to eat, trying to whatever. Mm. It was chaotic. And then there was one bomb raid in Halle only. Halle, for some reason, didn't have bomb raids.
Uh-huh.
The industry around it did, but the cities, why, I don't know. But in April of 45, there was a bomb raid in Halle. And one district was completely gone.
Mm.
No people, they didn't even try to dig them up underneath. You know, there was just that one district.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest was fine. We had, of course, all the windows coming out. And so we had all kinds of things to do. And my father tried to, he had to leave his studio and all his puppets in Vienna. We couldn't take anything there. And he made a coloring book for children, mm-hmm. also with these characters,
uh-huh.
and some postcards and so on. So he tried to make a living somehow.
Yeah. Yeah.
But very soon he started a big marionette theater.
Uh-huh.
He started already in 46 collecting people. They could work with him. And in 47, we had only one room we could heat. And so there was living room and studio and office and everything in one. And in 47, beginning of the year 47, my father called me in and said, "You're not doing very good in school. What is it?
Oh.
Don't you want anymore or can't you do it anymore?" I said, "I don't want it anymore."
Oh, well, you were honest.
And he said, "Well, what do you want?" I said, "I want to work with you." You know, I saw all these people deciding and all this. And he said, "Well, that can't be done because you have no qualifications."
Mm.
"I make you a suggestion. You apply for art school.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't take you, and there were political things going on, then you stay in school and make your Abitur, which is the grade 12 final to enable you to go to university."
Yes.
And I found that a fair suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
I applied for art school. Was lucky enough to be accepted.
Do you think that your father's name had some influence into you being accepted?
Well, he was the one who applied. But he wasn't really known to that art community.
Uh-huh.
You know, painters and sculptors, they look a little bit down on puppetry, you know.
Yeah.
You know, So, anyways, but the secretary of the head, she was very up to him. So, but that wasn't it. We had a two-day examination, 2 full days, 2 8-hour days in the school where we had to do all kinds of things, nature drawing and fantasy drawing and sculpting and crafts and whatever, and a little picture history and so on. So it was a sole examination, and I have to admit I wasn't anybody special there. And Germans are very good in equaling people. You have to know an art professor in the school in order to get in, but otherwise...
Well, there's always politics in schools.
Well,
always.
It's always... Wherever people are, that's what happens.
When,
but I was accepted, and I enjoyed it very much.
Is that when you made your first puppet? When did you make your very first puppet?
No, there was no puppetry education in the world then, at least not in the Western world. You couldn't learn it anywhere. And the famous puppeteers of that time, mainly started in the 30s, were either commercial artists or sculptors or so. They had the inspiration, they did it themselves.
Yeah.
There was nothing to learn from.
Right.
And my father was one of them, the younger ones. There was an older generation, but he was a little bit younger than the first ones. And no, but my father said, "You have to learn the basics of art. You have to learn how to draw," which I did already quite well. "And you have to learn something solid."
Yeah.
So the first semester was only nature drawing. It's very fascinating. It was 47. We didn't have much to eat. There was no art supplies. We begged in the newspaper for the ends of the rolls, mm-hmm. the newspaper printers. There was an ink you label your laundry with.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we used because there was no India ink to be had. So it was a terrible time that way. But it was a wonderful time. The Nazi time was over. The world was open. We got in literature from the rest of the world. We got it, you know, the expressionist painters and all this. It was such an exciting thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the students, it was a small art school, about 250 students. And the thing was, most of them were older. I was the chicken there. I was 15. The men were all in their mid-20s because they were drafted with 16, 17. They were in the war. They were in prison. And then they came back and they had to finish their high school. So they were all a lot mature than in normal times.
So let me ask you, because I'm going to jump forward a little bit. At what point did you make this your profession?
Well, it happened.
It just evolved naturally.
It happened. See, in 47, my father opened his minor theater. Mm-hmm. And of course, I was keen of helping.
Yeah.
So I learned to manipulate minorettes.
Yeah.
And I was a close friend of our costume designer. I watched her doing it all. And so since I helped there, I was already a little bit involved. And then I kept on my studies, and suddenly I was with my mother on a week vacation somewhere, and suddenly my father called, "We have to come back right away. One of the main manipulators had left for West Germany, and the tour was booked." Somebody needed to do that.
You were the understudy.
So I was the I didn't have a clue of all these things.
Right.
I was just, my father assumed you can do it.
And yes, it was in your DNA.
Yes.
Yes,
yes.
It was.
He knew that.
Yes.
And
yes.
So I had to jump in to that. I tell you, I thought my back was absolutely broken. You know, it's a precision like that.
Yes.
And
yeah,
the puppet weighs about a kilo or 2 kilos.
It's a chiropractor's nightmare.
Yeah, but we all survived it quite well.
Yeah.
After 4 weeks, you don't feel it.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I did that. And from then on, I was there.
That was your profession.
Yeah. Hand puppets I could do before. When I was 13 in Vienna, I already learned that.
Mm-hmm.
Not only to paint them, but also to manipulate.
Uh-huh.
And I obviously was quite good.
Right.
As you said, it's in the DNA.
Yes, it is. Absolutely.
And so this was wonderful 2 years on tour with that theater.
Mm.
Later on, I didn't do that anymore. I trained new people for it.
Uh-huh.
I was
the coordinator?
Behind the stage.
Yeah. Oh.
Who
you were behind.
Controls the curtain.
Oh, like a stage manager.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's what I was
then.
And at the end, because the older man who was, we had only old men and women.
Mm.
No young men were available because they were all still in prison camp.
Yeah.
And the old gentleman we had there, he was afraid to make decisions. And you had to make decisions on the spot because you had ordered a truck for transportation. And then suddenly the truck couldn't come. Either it broke down or there was no gasoline or whatever. So you had to make constantly decisions of some kind. Couldn't go ask the boss. He was in Halle.
Right.
So, and I made the decisions and they listened. They let me make the decisions because they were afraid of my father being mad. So she said, should the daughter do it, you know? And my father said, when he noticed that, he said, well, if you do it anyways, you may as well have the job, you know? So I was head of the troupe for 14 people. And it was fascinating. It was wonderful.
So.
And then, so I had the bug, 100%.
Yeah.
You know how that feels.
Absolutely.
And
there was nothing else you would have rather done at that point.
Right. So, but then came the politic, and the communists destroyed the theater, took it away from my father. The theater historians still try to find the leftovers and can't find
it. Again, everything gone.
So you couldn't do anything in a state like that. There's nothing you can do.
Yeah.
You have to sit still and take it.
Yeah.
So anyway, so that my dream was off. I was fully trained to take over that theater later on. You know, I was still young, but I was fully trained in every respect, in the carpentry, in the costume making, everywhere. And I went back to art school, took on commercial art because I figured that is something you can always make money with.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got married to an art student, of course.
Of course.
And that was the end of it.
Hey, it's Kevin. I hope you're enjoying the episode so far. Just a quick reminder that the SaskApes podcast is available for free on your favorite podcast app, or you can stream it from your browser. Check out the show notes for the link. On the SaskApes homepage, you'll notice something new under the logo called SaskApes Plus. You can't miss it. There's a big button saying support with a heart icon next to it. I'd love it if you could click on that button and help keep this podcast series going. When SaskApes launched in May 2014, it was the first podcast in the province celebrating arts, culture, and heritage. In fact, you'd have been pretty hard-pressed to find any Saskatchewan podcasts. So I'd like to think that we paved the way. It's been because of your support that this podcast is now in its 9th year. Okay, that's it. Enjoy the rest of the episode.
So, now I'm going to jump forward even faster. When did you find your way to Canada?
Long time after that.
Uh-huh.
See, my husband was a painter.
Yes.
And he got into political trouble too. So he was then... You could always get a little undercover. So he was then in an architect bureau as graphic artist, and he enjoyed it very much. He had to do scenery before the rebuilding and after the rebuilding and so on, and he liked that very much. But by the meantime, we had 4 children, and the oldest one was already in school. That meant when we sat on the table for a meal, we could not talk anymore because children pick up things, not knowing what they are, tell them in school, and you are in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, they were told stories there that, weren't true.
Yeah.
And I just didn't want communist children.
Yeah, yeah.
I just didn't want it.
So was that the catalyst for you to leave the country? Was that the motivation for you to leave?
No, we decided to leave for West Germany. That was in 1958. So my parents were already there. And they had left before because there was nothing for them left. My father again worked as commercial artist. And so we went there and tried to find work. Of course, it was much too late. West Germany was already settled. And Stuttgart, we went to Stuttgart, and Stuttgart had 3 art schools. And every semester, you know, at least 12 commercial artists were spit out, were finished. So we were too old. We didn't have a chance. I was told I applied at a company for commercial art as a commercial artist. And they were said, what, you're 30? No, we hire, don't hire old people like
that.
Oh,
my goodness. So, and you weren't really that old.
30? I didn't consider myself old, but they
30.
Because, you know, they pay pensions and so on.
Yes.
And the 31-year-olds weren't up to date.
Yeah.
See, a commercial artist has to be up to date every week. And we, of course, we weren't.
Yeah.
And so we had a terrible time, and we looked around what we could do. And to have an exhibition for my husband, we had to put down a few thousand marks. Well, we didn't have them. And so we looked around, and then my husband's sister was belongings were taken away too, because also for some political reason. So she went to Canada. Hmm. There were distant relatives somewhere in North Battleford, and that's where she went. And she got homesick, so she came back. Didn't like, she came in November. Well, you don't go to Germany in November.
Yeah.
And where most houses didn't have central heating. Yeah. And so she invited my husband for a visit. He was allowed to stay 2 months. Well, he stayed 4 months, mm-hmm. so I figured he must like it.
Mm-hmm.
I knew it was Castle Zero.
Yes.
I knew that.
Uh-huh.
Especially around Battleford and so on. And when my husband came back, I had time enough. I had 4 months' time to think about it, because I was sure when he stays that long, he likes it.
Yeah.
And he came and said, would you mind? I would like to go to Canada. Well, we had nothing to lose. We had children who needed an education. We couldn't afford it. So we said, let's go. Just an adventure. Let's go.
Yeah.
I didn't know what to expect. I didn't expect anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so we took our 4 children and came over. We came by boat and by train. It was quite an experience. The boat, a good one. The train, not so good.
I hear that a lot.
And then my sister-in-law wanted us, of course, to stay in Battleford. The girls can go become shop assistants and so on. And I said, no. And my husband had said, no, the only place to live is Saskatoon. We cannot stay in Battleford.
Mm-hmm.
So we moved to Saskatoon. I bought a house there. We had one friend in Saskatoon who had seen an exhibition of my husband, and he was a German from Poland. And so we were here, and we tried to find work. I found work in the university, again, that luck, you know.
Yes, yes.
For 5 months temporary untrained, they call them artists, but
yeah.
The pay wasn't like that.
Yeah.
Anyways, I was glad they had found something.
Yeah.
And I came there, and my supervisor was also a German. And the head of the department, he was from England. So I was lucky they accepted me. I had no problems doing the work, but I met people.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a book on Native Indian archaeology with Professor Poretsky. And I had a lot to do with the Extension Division lector. Is a lector in English also a lector?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Okay. And he was, you know, we got to talk. And I said, well, I'm actually a puppeteer. And he got fascinated. Oh, you're a puppeteer. Oh, and now it started. You have to give an extension class. So I gave an extension class, and it was many teachers. They were all excited. It was very, very successful. I was called to schools giving talks on puppetry and this and this. And I don't know if you remember Marion Graham.
Yes.
Yeah. She was still alive then.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure I've met her. I think I did meet her, but I'm not so sure. Anyway, she said, we have that girl in town. We have to make use of her. And so I don't know what happened behind the scenes, but I had been going to the drama department. They got a new head, and I introduced myself and said, puppeteer and so on. Okay, yeah. Oh, that would be fun. He liked puppets, the new head of drama, but he didn't have the money for a class. And it didn't take long. Suddenly he called me over and for a talk. And we talked for 2 hours about theater. And I was so excited that I found somebody I could talk to about theater because nobody knew about it. And when I went home, I said, well, I had a feeling that was an examination, which actually it was. But he called me the other day and I got a class, a summer school class, because I had a job. I didn't want to give up and the pay wasn't really that good. So I had a summer school class. All teachers was wonderful.
Now, were you making puppets during this time? All during this time, were you making brand new puppets?
No, I had never anything done with it. No.
Oh, well,
it was asleep.
But you still had your collection with you, what you could bring.
My collection consisted only of these.
Yes. Uh-huh.
That was all I had.
Okay.
And when I started teaching, of course, I got the class. And I didn't know all the English terms.
Mm-hmm.
In school English, you don't learn that.
Mm.
And in the books, it was there, the vocabulary I needed. So I had to read dozens and dozens of English and American puppetry books, which you can get through libraries.
Yes, I think I read them all while I was there.
So... most of them, the American ones, were not recommendable. Two or three of them were good. The rest was very amateurish, very bad. But the English ones were pretty good. So anyways, by that, I got the vocabulary.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew what was going on in these two countries. What's good. So the class continued. It was night classes then. And then I got a class in Emma Lake in the Arts College.
Oh, yeah,
that was very nice. And then I continued with night classes. And while that was going on, I, of course, began thinking about it. The library asked me for an exhibition, so I started collecting things and finding things. People knew I do puppetry. Somebody brought me some from China. Mm. And so... everybody knew about it, and it was a whole. And I enjoyed the teaching so much. It was really lots of fun. I found a good textbook for them, an English one. It was really good. It wasn't a textbook. You know, no, you don't know it. It was a dictionary of puppetry, and it had anything you need to know. It was a wonderful book. So I decided to use that as a textbook because there was nothing else suitable. And then the drama department collapsed. The head had to go, and the new head had nothing better to do than send all the professors off. He wanted his own friends to come.
Politics again.
Pardon?
Politics again.
Oh, it's always the case. That's always the case.
Yeah.
Everywhere and, And the university is kind of a small community, you know? Actually, two small communities, faculty and the staff, and going the same anywhere. So I lost my class.
Mm-hmm.
I fought for it. I even went to the vice president of studies, whatever the hierarchy is. And he knew my story, but he knew it in reverse for some reason.
Mm.
And I realized if I go on now, it gets dangerous. So I backed off. And that was the end of the class. A few years later, 1 year before we met, I had a few performances in the Mendel Art Gallery by Shoshana Hodasha. This was a Jewish organization.
Yes.
They came to me and they wanted a show.
Yeah.
So I gave them a show in the Mendelarm downstairs. They had a nice auditorium. And the next year she wanted another show. And the first show was from my students, you know. I made the puppets, but they played and so on. But it was plays, English plays, very nice ones. And then I said, well, I have to do a real puppet play. And I looked for an English translation of a German fairy tale, which I thought was very suitable, Caliph Stork. I couldn't find a decent translation, so I tried to translate myself. I failed completely. I can't do it. So what I did, I sat down and I wrote a play. Mm-hmm. I could write in English a play, not an essay, but a play. Mm-hmm. And for children, but I couldn't translate. That was too much for me. So that play I made the puppets for, and it was performed. Mm-hmm. And they charged for then a high entrance fee, I think $2 or $2 or $3, and the same thing for a child. Mm-hmm. And it was a children's show. Mm-hmm. You know, and we couldn't put the people in the room. They sat on the stairs and the entrance and everywhere.
Because it was so popular?
Yeah.
Oh, that's
they
wonderful.
Liked it. It has never.
Yeah.
They didn't know that.
Right.
You know, nobody had ever seen a puppet play. They didn't. When I started out, nobody knew what it was. Uh-huh. And so it was quite successful. And then I also had lots of workshops all over and exhibitions in Regina and in Saskatoon and workshops all over the province. And the Extension Division was quite active that way. And then when my classes were all over, I still was a member of the International Puppetry Association. And there was an international, every 4 years they have an international convention, this organization. And it was founded 1929 in Prague. And I went to that convention. I figured it doesn't come. It was in Washington, D.C. I said, it doesn't come any closer.
Right.
I have to go there. And it was quite something. It was 8 days of puppet shows.
Oh.
From 300 countries,
heaven.
Puppeteers.
Oh.
There was something, I tell you. I mean, you had to pick and choose. You couldn't see all of them. It was no way. But it was very well organized. And I have to say, it was quite an event. But what I noticed then was that puppetry is changing.
Uh-huh.
It changed. It was noticeable very much. It wasn't all through yet, but it was noticeable.
Changing for the better?
Different. I cannot say better or worse.
Right.
Different, very different. The philosophy behind it was not that the puppet has its own world, but that it's related to the people. And I don't go for that. So anyways, I saw some good shows and some not so good shows, but I noticed it changed. So I wasn't really so sad that I lost my classes because I knew I couldn't change. Mm-hmm. I loved my old puppetry and I didn't like the new one very well. I would never have become a puppeteer now. It's different. It's very different now.
What was the main difference?
The difference is that to our old philosophy, the puppet became an object. To us, they were subjects.
Uh-huh,
We knew them all. They were little
characters.
We knew them all.
Yeah.
We knew perfectly. And the way also the other manipulators and the way they were treated, it was amazing to see they were not treated as things.
Yeah.
People talked to them behind the stage, you know, fixing the strings. Well, you haven't been right. You shouldn't move too much and so on. See, there was a relationship.
Yeah.
And when people came backstage after the show, they always noticed, oh, I thought they were much bigger. Yeah. Do you mind it is about that high?
Yes. About 18 inches.
And, but if they are by themselves and the sets are in scale and everything, you don't know how big they are.
Plus, you know, it occurs to me as you say that the magic of theater in general is that it is more dynamic than real life. It is bigger than real life. So
it's a concentration of real life.
Yes, so it makes sense that in a viewer's mind that they would be bigger physically because they become part of this experience, which is heightened reality.
Yeah, and also, I also in hand puppets, it's, I remember Barbara, I had a hand puppet show here in, I didn't only do hand puppets here, I couldn't, mine is, it was much too complicated. And I had a show in a YMCA once, and Barbara was there, she was still in school.
Barbara is your daughter.
Well,
yes,
it's my
Barbara
daughter.
Happens
she
to
was
be
there,
sitting
she was
here.
Still in school.
We'll hear more from Barbara in part two.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And so the next time I had a show there, she came there too, and she said, why didn't you use the Nice Forest set? I said, I don't have a Nice Forest set. Oh, yeah, that it was in the forest. I always played in front of a black velvet film. See what the fuzz the imagination does?
Yeah, fascinating. That's amazing.
And that's with marionettes, so you don't do that so much. But with hand puppets, you can do that. Remember our impresario, there were no sets.
Yes, no, that's right.
But I'm sure people saw them.
Yeah, yeah.
See, and that's the thing what I like about puppetry. But now when the people are on stage with them, and quite often not disguised or anything, and handle them, it's an entirely different thing. And that's not my world.
When did you find scissor cutting as part of your creative outlet?
Oh, I think I was about six.
Okay.
My father encouraged me when I started playing around, but I never did it seriously. But then in high school, we were encouraged. We had an artist as an art teacher, and she encouraged us to this paper cutting. And it's an old tradition.
Now, is it?
And
is it based on, when I look at your artwork, I immediately think of, and I was infatuated with this form of puppetry, the shadow puppetry. The shadow.
Well, yeah, there is a relation.
Yeah.
Yes, there is a relation. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And in Germany, shadow puppetry was very popular in the 19th century, early 20th century. They were done in black and white.
Yeah.
Well, the Far East does it in color.
Yeah.
But in Germany, they were always done in black and white. And people who made shadow puppets also made scissor cuts. Yeah. So it's a thing that more or less done. Everybody did it in school. I enjoyed doing it very much. And when I was 12, I got a little more into it without any just fairy tales cut out and so on. And I even, on the train from Vienna to Halle, when we had to escape, my mother had birthday and I made her a little scissor cut in the train for her birthday. I still have it. And then it slept. I was busy with puppets, didn't even think of it.
Uh-huh.
And then the puppet thing kind of went out,
yeah,
you know. And what did I do? I didn't do anything. Then my husband got sick and I had to take care of him and so on. So you don't think of, you know how that feels.
Yes.
You know, you don't think of anything else.
Yeah.
And, but in, I think it was 88, something like that. I was already retired. I retired from the university with 55. I had enough of being employed. And the German community was the one. Can you do Scherenschnitt? Yes, of course, yeah.
That's German for scissor cutting.
That's the scissor, yes. Yeah. And they wanted, the German Council was already in existence then. And it was Brian McKinstry was the head. And he asked me, there was supposed to be a German conference every year in Saskatchewan. And he asked me if I could make a poster with Scherenschnitt and an old Tree of Life, old traditional pattern. So I did that, and then it got going. Then came Ottawa. Who did that poster?
Oh, yes.
We want, also the German community, we want Scherenschnitt. So I made a calendar for them. I made Christmas cards for them. And there is a Christmas card. That's the first Christmas tree in Canada.
Right, and jigsaw puzzle.
Yeah, that's what Barbara did later. But it was a Christmas card.
How is this accomplished? How do you do this? How do you create scissor cutting? Are you literally cutting those dark
figures? Yes, a black piece of paper.
Okay.
And very fine, pointed, sharp scissors.
Yes.
And then you cut.
Okay.
I mean, I know a lot. I was a member of the German Scissor Cutting Association, which doesn't exist anymore. There were people, and I watched them. They just sat down and cut. I don't know how they do it. I have to make a design. You know, on the back, I make a design. Hold.
But you, as I look at them, you truly can't disconnect completely from the paper. There must be a point of contact.
You are noticing things. there used to be a rule. A scissor cut has to be one piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
No single parts.
Yes, we're looking
and
at
I
one.
And I still like this rule.
Yes.
And I know some colleagues in the Scherenschnitt Verein, they said, oh, look, it's all connected. See, I make sure I have not a single piece. It's all connected. Mm. And that is one of the rules which do not, most of the people now don't go by that anymore. Now everything goes.
Why would you?
But I love it. I love restrictions.
Yeah, yeah. And you took these on tour? You went on tour with OSAC?
They are still on tour.
They
are looking for a location in Saskatoon. Yes.
Well, they took a hiatus during the pandemic.
In the pandemic, it took a little bit of a break. I have seen a few shows, and we have been to Bartos, when was it, in June? They had a gallery there, and it was out of the schedule. It was just, they said, we have an opening, give us that show. And we went there, and it was very nice in the art gallery in Waltrus. And the next one is in Assiniboia. So.
Next one coming up, you mean?
Yeah, they are still doing it. And, not completely. But as I said, that is a very different line, which I developed through that encouragement by the German community here and especially in Ottawa. That's a piece out of that calendar. And so then there is one that is a puppet film in the making. And, there was from Germany, he said, we have nothing on puppetry. Can't you do something on puppetry? So I did that. And these are scenes from my father's theater, which I did by memory, you know.
Did I read, or am I just making this up, that at some point you made a donation in Germany of some of your father's work?
Yes.
And that
2016.
That was on the occasion of the 25th anniversary of the reunification of Germany?
Was it?
Yes. 2015, yeah.
Yeah, but I had planned to do it for a long time.
And this was your father's work?
It was the leftovers of my father's life work, which were actually two marionettes, three hand puppets, and three heads from the film.
That's it?
That's all that was left. And I figured it needs... There are two puppetry museums in Germany. Mm. One is in Munich, one is in Dresden. I was usually more connected with the Munich one, but the head of that department is not very active or whatever. We didn't get into contact so well, but in Dresden they did a lot. They tried to find my father's work, and they used his images. And so he was a very well-known personality there. None of the living people remembers him, of course, but his name is very, very well known there. And so that's why I got in contact with Dresden, and Barbara was with me. So we went and donated these things. And they were all excited. You wouldn't believe it.
When I listen to your story, you had to give up a lot and not have an incredible emotional attachment to things that you had to leave behind, or did you just become numb so that you didn't really absorb the fact that you were leaving something? So
to become numb, you know that.
Yeah.
And artists cannot afford to become that.
Well, no. Didn't it hurt to leave all that stuff behind one, two, three times?
Don't forget, I grew up in a wartime.
Yeah.
I was 8 years old when the war started.
Yeah.
Every day you didn't know if you are still alive the other day.
Yes.
So it's a very different feeling you have. And when you live in the middle of bomb raids.
Yeah.
And your relatives die in the war.
Yeah.
And all these things. You get kind of an armor.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
You know, even this life was an everyday life.
Yeah.
You know, it is...
It just was.
Yeah, it was an everyday life. And it's only... How long was the war? 6 years? It's hard. I have a feeling it was 20 years, you know.
Sure.
So, and then when you lose these things, you have this armor, and in the moment of the loss, that's right, you're numb.
Yeah.
The attachment, never lose. Yeah. You won't lose your attachment to the theater, and I don't lose my attachment to the puppets.
You have the memories which can't ever be taken
away. I have the memories, treasures of memories.
Yes.
And I am not angry, because the times you live through are the times you live through. Yes. What can you do?
Truer words were never spoken right now during the pandemic.
I was just going to say, the pandemic, what can you do? You live your life as good as you can. This has sad factors to it. For me, has positive factors. I'm a born loner, and I love being retired, not having to do with anything, and just enjoying whatever is there. And the memories. The memories are wonderful, and there are bad ones too.
Yeah.
And the politics, I remember there are times in my life when I get under mental pressure, I collapse. But I cannot stand. It happened a few times here in Canada. It was done to me by people not knowing, you know, that. But I had a good psychiatrist, and he always wrote me a nice attest, say that she can't be exposed to things like that, because...
Well, you must be an artist if you have a good psychiatrist and you're a loner. That's the two major ingredients for becoming an artist. So good.
Well, in a way, you're right.
Yeah, you're right.
But and when I moved in this house here, and I looked at that room, what most people use as living room.
Mm.
To me, a living room has to have four walls and a door. So I said, well, that's the ideal museum.
It's like a loft. Yeah.
And so that's all my puppets are there on the wall and the pictures here. This are some of my father's puppets.
Yeah.
And there is an, my husband did that. And there is another one in the middle.
Yeah.
So, and this is my, a hobby of mine,
all of these little traditional
dresses
from
all
around
over
the world.
Yes. Yeah.
You have the United Nations represented there.
Yeah, this is private hobby. And this is toys from...
Little miniatures.
Miniatures from the Erzgebirge. That is, the Ore Mountains, I think are they called here. It's the far eastern part of Germany. And they make toys. For hundreds of years, they make toys. And my father's family came from there. Not my father, but his ancestors. And in the right box, these are my toys. And these are the toys of my father and my uncle. Mm. The old ones. Mm. And the left box. So this is still what I have left from... It was so small, I could take it along.
You wrote a book.
Pardon?
You wrote a book. At one point, in 2013, you wrote a book in black and white?
I didn't write a book.
Okay.
I can't write. Has this my down? No, I can't. That's one thing. I can write children's plays, but I cannot write. See, this is not a book I have written.
It's a picture book.
It's a book I, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's after my husband died and I lived in here, I had a feeling I was with him. See, when he went out painting, I went with him and sketched on photograph. And that's the result of it. I did my memories of and my sketches of the Canadian prairies.
I was going to ask you, now you've answered it, how the prairies have influenced your art.
I love it.
Yes.
To me, that's the ideal landscape.
I was going to say, I can imagine.
Yeah, I just love it. When we came here, isn't that wonderful? See, what I love about the prairies is that you feel so unimportant.
Huh.
You know? Nature is so big. It's wonderful. I love it.
You're not unimportant. Not in the artistic world, your contribution to your art.
But
I know what you mean. You feel insignificant against nature because of the vastness of the space.
Because I shock all Saskatchewan people by saying, I love the winter.
Did any of your children also get the bug and want to be involved with puppetry? Did the DNA move to the next generation?
I don't think so.
No.
There is artistic talent all around, also in the grandchildren and so on. That's shown, but from which side it came, we of course don't know. You know, it was my husband and me. We were both artists, so I don't know. But in puppetry, no. And I have to say, it's a very complex art.
Yeah.
So... Barbara was a little bit involved in being closer, but otherwise one is a photographer, one daughter, the other one is a goldsmith, also very creative. My son is a high-tech engineer. And my father, see, it was just my father and me.
Mm.
There was nothing before, and there would be nothing after. These things happen. In most cases, the son, the children of these puppeteers aren't even in that.
Nowadays.
No, even
or
then.
Or always, even then. Then.
Hmm. Yeah. It's a very special thing. And it used to be, it has changed in that sense too. My father already started to change it. He was declared crazy because he changed it. One specialist in Munich said, you know, her father had a big problem. He did everything too early.
He was a visionary.
Yeah. He had a theater with 14 people.
Mm.
And for some reason, people were convinced that it has to be done by one or two. But he said, if it's done well, it has to be specialists.
Mm.
He had actors for the voices,
mm-hmm,
and manipulators for that.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a stage designer and a costume designer. And it was handled like a big theater.
Right.
And that was the result. That was very successful.
So it is a legitimate career today? It's a legitimate career in Europe?
There is the first school of puppetry was in Czechoslovakia, in Prague.
Uh-huh.
And that is already, this was already, I think, after the Second World War was that right started, because Prague is a kind of a hub in puppetry in Europe. And now I think there are puppetry schools all over.
Why don't...
Or parts of art academies also. But you can learn it. And I've seen in Lübeck, I have seen graduates of a puppetry school performing. And you know what Olaf Bernstenger said? Well, without learning, you can do better. That's often the case, isn't it?
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
When you're... These old pioneers of the artistic puppetry, they were artists. They had visions. They wanted to do certain things. But now they have a little figure in their hand, and they, I don't get it either, you know?
I find it sad that in this country, I only know one professional puppeteer. I find it sad in this country that we don't recognize it as...
Is that the man from Calgary?
Ronnie Burkett.
Well, he is incredible.
Cal is
incredible. And he is actually completely out of his time. Not in his themes.
Yes.
Not in his style, but in his idea. You know?
But why has that not caught on? Why don't we have...
It had caught on, but times change and things are different. Look at fashion. Look at this. Look at that. How it changed. You know, I'm very much into cultural history. It's amazing how things change.
But with puppetry, it hadn't just changed. It doesn't exist.
It has changed in its existence quite a bit.
Where do we find it, other than in your lovely loft here?
Actually, puppetry is all over the world.
But in Canada, I mean.
In Canada, kind of. There were very good performers in Montreal. I have seen them in Washington. Excellent. Then there were good ones in Vancouver. We had about two or three good ones. They must be very old now.
Yeah.
Not quite as old as me, but just about. So, old Canada and the United States is the same. The pioneers aren't interested in art. They have to make a living.
Yeah. Well, there is that.
And artists are usually not extremely interested in making a living. They usually have a wife looking after that part of the life.
I'm going to ask you the most impossible question to answer, but I'm curious to see if you can. Which is your favorite form, marionette or hand puppet? I know it's like choosing
a
child.
Don't ask me which is your favorite child.
Okay. Yes, exactly.
You can. I love both for very different reasons. See, the hand puppet is yourself.
Yes, it's an extension of your appendage.
It's a sense of you, and it's very concentrated, and you can express quite a bit. It's very different. Where in mine it's a very complex form of puppetry. And that's what I taught my students. Puppets, especially now our puppets, have no character. They are types.
Right.
They have no, they can't be good and bad at the same time. Human beings can. puppets cannot. They're right. either good or bad. They're either funny or serious. They can be only one thing. And this should be portrayed in the head of the puppet. When it comes on stage, you should more or less be able to see what kind of person that is. And that, to me, is the essential thing in puppetry, that the puppet, when it comes on stage, you should know, it should go for marionettes as well as for hand puppets, but in hand puppets it's a challenge because you have only the head. I mean, there is a little dress around, but basically it's only the head. And I like that. I really like that.
Do you miss performing?
Not now.
No?
Your body isn't fit anymore in that age. I mean, I'm 90, and there is quite a desire for peace and quiet.
Okay,
I have missed it, I have missed it a long time. It took me a long time to get over it, not being in the theater anymore. But, I mean, life is long, and you have to get over a lot. It's fine. It's still with me. It's still with me. I won't lose it.
I could talk for hours on the subject of puppetry.
It is a fascinating subject.
It is. And I look around at your work, and it is both awe-inspiring and beautiful and makes me misty-eyed.
You say that, misty-eyed.
That's
what I still have.
Yeah.
Us, Barbara, when we were in Dresden, we went to the in the Zwinger, where the old masters hang. And she said, "Well, Mom, I've never seen you so excited." Mm-hmm. You know? I was suddenly,
I understand.
You know?
I truly
And it was
understand.
The old ones, the Holbein and the Cranach and the, it was, you know? But this is where life is worth living. In the arts, to me.
Yes, I agree. I'm so glad we got to do a very fast moving journey through your life. And I'm so happy to reconnect with you 40 years later. I was thinking on my way over here, just how naive I was back then. I wasn't curious enough. You were introduced to me. Dave Kaplan said, "We're going to do the Impresario." He didn't give me an option. He said, "You're going to be in it." And I don't know how he knew, because I don't think I ever spoke about puppetry. But I don't think I was curious enough.
In that age. No,
it's life experience. Yeah.
And also you were into music, you know.
Even that, I don't think I was curious enough for music. I think there's an element of art that is just the level of which we embrace art is largely influenced by our life experience.
Basically, to embrace it, you have to be...
You have to have lived.
Grown up.
Yeah.
You have to be mature enough to be able to consciously embrace it. I was born into it. I can't help it. So it was easy for me. I never had to embrace it. It embraced me kind of thing. But if you make a decision like that, my husband was the same. It embraced him. He was painting as a child. Some people can't help it, you know. And in my case, it just happened. And I'm glad it happened. It was the right thing for me. And the way life went, I'm not a person who says it could have been that or it should have been that. No, as it comes and I take it.
So great to see you again. Thank you so much.
I enjoyed it. I very enjoyed our talk.
Hey, thanks for listening. Music for Sascapes is provided by Saskatchewan-born singer-songwriter Jeffrey Straker. Sascapes can be downloaded from iTunes, Google Play, the Sascapes app for Android devices, and all of the other major podcasting apps. Stop by and say hi to us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter @Sascapes. So tell me, what fuels the culture in your community? Who has a story that must be heard? Consider bringing Sascapes to your part of the province. Email us at sascapes@gmail.com or find us on Facebook. Please share your thoughts on this episode or any of the episodes by writing a review in the iTunes Store or Google Play. Your star ratings help our audience grow. Remember, our stories are our legacy. Now, somewhere around the world for years to come, stories like those found in Sascapes are being heard. Think about it. We're creating an oral archive so that who we are in this province is never forgotten. I'm Kevin Power. Join me again next time.